Ready for a journey back in time? Today, we're diving deep into Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale.
Mm-hmm.
That's roughly 560 to 793 CE. You know, for you history buffs out there,
right?
We're going to uncover how this little corner of Yorkshire played a bigger role in shaping England than you might think.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking about kings and battles here,
right?
Although we'll get to those. Think about it. How did this place transform from Roman Britain to the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms?
It's fascinating because we often picture this period as like a hard break between those two worlds,
yeah.
Roman Britain and the Anglo-Saxons, but it's
right.
It's much more nuanced, you see. A gradual blending of cultures, really.
Okay.
Even in Kirkdale itself, we see these hints of continuous cultural and religious significance.
Okay.
Possibly even dating back to the Roman era.
Okay, so we're talking about a site that might have held religious importance even before the Anglo-Saxons.
Potentially, yeah.
That's got to be like piecing together a puzzle, right?
It is.
What kind of clues are we talking about here?
Well, the specifics of like Roman era activity in Kirkdale are still somewhat of a mystery.
Right.
There is evidence pointing to a potential religious site.
Okay.
Imagine a Roman funerary building or a mausoleum. A place where rituals were performed.
Right.
And maybe even whispers of those ancient practices kind of lingered as the Anglo-Saxons arrived.
You know, when you put it that way, it really makes you wonder about those everyday interactions between, you know, the remaining Romano-Britons and the incoming Anglo-Saxons.
Absolutely.
What stories did they share? What tensions arose? I mean.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the historical record only provides a glimpse into that period of transition.
Right.
But one thing's clear, though. The shift from Roman to Anglo-Saxon dominance wasn't an overnight thing.
Right.
There's evidence suggesting that the native population wasn't completely displaced.
Okay.
Instead, a new mixed Anglo-Saxon identity emerged over time.
Hmm. That makes you wonder about the stories, the traditions, even the conflicts that might have played out during that that blending of cultures.
For sure, yeah.
Okay, so how does this like dramatic arrival of the Anglo-Saxons on the historical stage play into this? Remember those chilling accounts from Gildas describing, you know, barbarians driving people to the sea?
It does paint a picture of chaos, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But by the mid-5th century, right in this very area, the Kingdom of Deira was emerging.
Okay.
Picture powerful rulers, fiercely loyal warriors.
Right.
And yes, that ever-present thread of chaos that you see reflected in stories like Beowulf.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. Beowulf, epic poem, Scandinavian heroes, monsters.
Right.
How does that connect to the real history of Kirkdale?
Because Beowulf, even with its fantastical elements,
right,
reflects the political realities of that world.
Right.
Think about it. The poem revolves around this strong leader, a ring giver, like a king.
Right.
Who offers protection in exchange for loyalty.
Right.
And Kirkdale, nestled right in the heart of Deira, would have been very much a part of that world.
So our ancestors, the people living in and around Kirkdale, would have been living with the legacy of these kingdoms, these power struggles. It's like they were right there in the thick of it.
Exactly. And speaking of their world, we can't forget how Christianity itself took root in this very soil.
Right.
It's a story that involves a king, a pope, and the Pama. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
A pun.
A pun. Okay, you've got my attention.
Right.
Tell me more about this pun-loving pope.
Okay, so the story goes that in Rome, around 580 CE, Pope Gregory sees these fair-haired slaves in the marketplace. He learns their angles from Didier, the land ruled by King Eli.
Okay.
And Gregory, being in a rather playful mood, makes not one, not two, but three puns based on this information.
Okay, now I'm really curious and a little worried about where this is going with the whole pun thing. Were they at least good puns?
They were impactful, to say the least.
Okay, right.
Gregory remarked that the Angles looked like angels, prime candidates for conversion.
Mm.
He then quipped that the Darians were the era of anger and needed to be saved from wrath. And finally, he suggested that Alleluia should be sung in the land of King Eli.
Okay, I have to admit, those are pretty good, especially for a pope from 580 CE. But what's the significance of all this wordplay? Did it actually have any real impact?
It did.
Really?
This seemingly insignificant event is often seen as a defining moment, marking the beginning of a distinct English identity tied to Christianity.
Wow.
And it led directly to the Gregorian mission in 597 CE sending Augustine to convert those angelic Anglo-Saxons.
Wow, so a few puns in a Roman marketplace set in motion the Christianization of England? That's one for the history books.
It really is.
Wow.
And here's where it gets even more interesting. Kirkdale itself would soon be home to a minster, a significant church, dedicated to none other than Pope Gregory himself.
Oh, wow.
It's almost like history coming full circle, right?
Talk about an enduring legacy.
Yeah.
But hold on. England at this point wasn't one big, happy Christian family, was it? Wasn't there that whole Celtic versus Roman Christianity thing going on?
You're right to bring that up.
Yeah.
While Augustine and his mission were busy converting the southern kingdoms, Christianity had already found its way to England through a different route.
Okay.
Through Ireland.
Right.
And the Celtic Christian tradition.
Ah, so two different branches of Christianity with their own unique traditions and practices, all vying for a foothold. It sounds like a recipe for some serious theological disagreements.
Oh, there were definitely disagreements. They argued about the date of Easter.
Oh, boy.
Different styles of tonsure. Oh. That's the shaving of the head thing for those of us who didn't grow up with it.
Right, right.
Even the way religious services were conducted. These differences sparked some pretty heated debates.
So how did they ever bridge those differences? I mean, was it a case of one conquering the other? Did they have a holy war?
Thankfully, it didn't come to a full-blown war.
Okay.
In 663 CE, they held this pivotal meeting, the Synod of Whitby.
Okay.
Just a stone's throw from Kirkdale.
Whitby, like the Whitby.
That's the one.
With the Abbey and the Dracula connections. You're kidding.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. And at this synod, after much debate and deliberation, they reached a compromise.
Okay.
They decided to adopt the Roman practices and traditions.
Okay.
Over the Celtic ones.
So this seemingly local event had huge implications. It essentially shaped the religious landscape of England for centuries to come, influencing everything from church services to how people experience their faith.
It did.
Wow. I bet the Celtic Christian faction wasn't too thrilled about that outcome.
Probably not.
So how did a place like Kirkdale fit into this whole, like, battle for the soul of England?
Remember, these events weren't happening in a vacuum.
Right.
Kirkdale might seem like a quiet, remote place now.
Right.
But back then, it was very much a part of a dynamic landscape.
Right.
And its location in the heart of Dadira, a kingdom with strong ties to Rome, meant that it was directly impacted by these religious and political shifts.
It really makes you appreciate how, you know, seemingly isolated communities were still very much a part of the bigger picture.
They were.
But all this talk about kings and synods, it makes you wonder about the everyday lives of the people living in Kirkdale.
Yeah.
What was it like for them during this time?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And one that takes us deeper into the heart of Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale.
Right.
Stay with us as we unearth those details and more right after this short break.
Okay, so we've got Kirkdale right in the middle of this whirlwind of religious change caught between these two different versions of Christianity.
Yeah.
It's like being on the front lines of history.
It is.
But what was life actually like for the people living there?
Right.
Were they just like living and breathing these epic historical events every day?
It's easy to get caught up in the big picture stuff, the kings, the synods, the spread of these, you know, powerful new ideas.
Yeah.
But you're right to bring it back down to the human level. For most people in Anglo-Saxon England, life revolved around the land, around farming and survival.
So are we talking like oxen plowing fields and harvesting crops by hand?
Right.
Was it all very little house on the prairie, but in Anglo-Saxon England?
You're not far off.
Okay.
Though, like everything else, the tools and techniques they used were constantly evolving.
Right.
For instance, there's evidence that after the decline of Roman influence, there was a shift away from the intensive wheat production that had been, you know, so characteristic of that era.
Right.
People turned more towards pastoralism.
Okay.
Raising sheep, cattle, pigs.
So instead of those, like, meticulously organized Roman fields, imagine lush meadows providing winter fodder, herds of animals grazing over vast tracts of land.
Right.
It's almost like a more nomadic lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Following the herds.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
The population might have been more dispersed, more mobile during that period. But then, interestingly, by the time Kirkdale Minster was established, around 685 CE, we see a shift back towards arable farming.
Okay.
Back to growing wheat and barley.
Okay, so back to the fields. But now with a brand new minster as a spiritual center, what a fascinating transition. It makes you wonder about those early farmers who were literally cultivating a whole new way of life for themselves.
Exactly. And it's around this same time that we start to see the emergence of something called the open field system.
Okay.
It's essentially a precursor to the agricultural landscapes we're more familiar with today.
Now, when you say open field system, for those of us who aren't agricultural historians,
right.
What exactly does that look like?
Imagine large fields divided into strips with different families responsible for farming specific strips.
Okay.
It was this communal approach to land use that would shape English agriculture for centuries.
So those ancestors of ours living in and around Kirkdale, they were real pioneers in a way, transforming the land, adapting to these new ways of life, all with this backdrop of religious change and political intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible story.
It is.
You mentioned Kirkdale Minster earlier, though. Can we dive into that a bit more?
Sure.
What can you tell me about this Minster?
Well, picture this.
Mm-hmm.
It's around 685 CE, and Kirkdale, this place that might have already held religious significance for centuries, gets a brand new minster, likely dedicated to Pope Gregory himself.
Okay, now that's a power move. It's like they're making a statement, right? We're with Rome, we're on Team Gregory.
Yeah.
Especially after that whole Synod of Whitby, where they decided to go with the Roman traditions over the Celtic ones.
That's certainly a possible interpretation.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, what were those early Christians in Kirkdale thinking? What conversations were they having about these big changes? It really makes you think about the hopes and even the fears that people were grappling with during this time of immense change.
Speaking of hopes and fears, you mentioned something before we started recording about a monastery at Lastingham and a somewhat shadowy figure named Sed.
Ah, yes, Sed. He was quite a character.
Okay.
Bishop Sed was actually the brother of another prominent religious leader named Chad.
Okay.
And he was chosen to bring that Celtic Christian tradition from Lindisfarne down to this area.
Okay.
And around 659 CE, he established a monastery at Lastingham. And here's the thing.
Okay.
Bede, in his ecclesiastical history, describes the location as a place of steep and distant mountains, more suited to wild beasts than monks.
Wild beasts? Okay, Bede doesn't sound like he was mincing words.
Right.
I'm picturing something totally remote, completely untouched wilderness.
That was most likely the intention.
Yeah.
Bede writes that King Oidilwald, who granted the land to Sed, wanted a place where he could, you know, escape the pressures of court life.
Right.
A place for prayer, contemplation.
Right.
And ultimately his final resting place.
It's kind of ironic though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Founding a monastery in the middle of nowhere to find peace and quiet, and then having your story told by, like, a historian as influential as Bede.
It seems there's no escaping history.
Right.
But the founding of Lastingham tells us a lot about the world our ancestors inhabited.
Right.
It shows the spread of Christianity, the influence of these powerful figures like Sed, and the importance of places like Kirkdale and Lastingham as these centers of faith and learning.
It's like they were creating these little pockets of civilization, of spirituality within this this wild, untamed landscape.
Yeah.
And speaking of connections, you mentioned that Kirkdale itself wasn't exactly isolated.
Right.
Weren't there ties to other significant centers of learning? I'm thinking of York, which even back then was making a name for itself.
You're exactly right. By the 8th century, York had transformed into this renowned center of knowledge and scholarship. They even had connections to the court of Charlemagne. Yes, that's Charlemagne, the king of the Franks.
Whoa, Charlemagne. Okay, that just blows my mind. To think that this place we're talking about, nestled here in the Yorkshire countryside, was somehow linked to one of the most powerful figures in Europe at the time.
It really highlights how interconnected the medieval world truly was.
Yeah.
It wasn't all isolated villages and feudal lords.
Right.
Ideas, people, and goods were flowing between these places, creating this vibrant cultural exchange.
Right.
And Kirkdale was right in the mix.
This is all absolutely incredible, but I do want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, the story about a Saxon princess buried near Loftus.
Right.
It's a bit earlier than the period we've been focusing on, but it seems like an important thread in the story of this region.
You're right to bring her up. It's a fascinating story that adds another layer to our understanding of the past. Around 650 CE, this high-ranking woman, perhaps a princess, was laid to rest in this remarkable burial mound overlooking Carlin Howe.
Carlin Howe. Didn't some Farndale descendants end up living there?
You are correct.
It's like these different chapters of history are all intertwined.
You're thinking of the Craggs line of Farndales, who would eventually call Craggs Farm and Carlin Howe their home centuries later.
Right.
But back in the 7th century, it was this Saxon princess who held court, so to speak, watching over the landscape from her final resting place.
Right.
And her burial, amidst a prehistoric monument, no less, speaks to the layers upon layers of history present in this region, with echoes of the past constantly mingling with the present.
Talk about ancestral connections. Okay, this is all starting to paint such a vivid picture. We've got this thriving Anglo-Saxon community in Kirkdale, connected to the wider European stage through places like York, and then these echoes of even earlier cultures present in these burials. It makes you realize that history isn't just dates and names in a textbook. It's about real people living their lives in a world that was both familiar and incredibly different from our own.
Exactly. And while we've focused on the big events and key figures, it's crucial to remember those everyday folks.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers, craftspeople, families, all going about their lives amidst this incredible period of transformation.
And to think they were in so many ways shaping the England we know today, it makes this history so much more tangible, so much more meaningful.
It does.
But I think we've only scratched the surface of what we can learn from this deep dive into Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale. It's incredible how all of these threads, religion, politics, daily life, all intertwine to create this rich tapestry of Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale.
It is.
It's like we're getting a glimpse into the lives of our ancestors, seeing the world through their eyes.
And the amazing thing is we can actually catch glimpses of that tapestry in the physical objects they left behind.
Right.
Remember those ornate sarcophagus lids and architectural fragments discovered at Kirkdale Minster?
Right.
They're like portals.
Yeah.
Transporting us back to the 8th century.
I can only imagine, to hold one of those objects in your hand, knowing it was crafted by someone who lived in Kirkdale all those centuries ago.
Yeah.
It must be like touching history itself.
It really does. And, you know, those objects tell us that Kirkdale wasn't just some isolated rural village.
Right.
The craftsmanship, the symbolism woven into their designs.
Right.
It suggests a community deeply engaged with, religious and cultural ideas.
Hmm.
For example, some of the designs found on these artifacts seem to reference a chalice.
Right.
A clear connection to Christian rituals.
So it's almost like they were making a conscious choice to express their faith, their identity through these everyday objects. It makes you wonder about the stories behind those objects, the hands that crafted them, the people who used them.
Exactly. And, you know, it ties back to something we touched on earlier, that possible connection between Kirkdale and the monastery at Monk Wearmouth Jarrow,
yeah,
where Bede wrote his famous histories.
Oh, right. The Cornu Vallis connection. I have to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on that one. Refresh my memory. What was the significance of that link again?
Essentially, Cornu Vallis is the Latin name for Kirkdale.
Right.
And there's some speculation that Bede might have had ties to this area, perhaps even drawing inspiration from Kirkdale for his writings. It's still a bit of a historical puzzle, but it's a fascinating possibility, don't you think?
Absolutely. It makes you realize that even in the 8th century, a place like Kirkdale wasn't existing in isolation.
Right.
It was part of this wider network of knowledge, of influence that stretched far beyond its borders.
It did. And that's a really important point, because while we've talked about the big events, the arrival of the Anglo-Saxons, the spread of Christianity, the political landscape, it's easy to forget that amidst all of that, life went on.
Right.
People were farming the land, practicing their crafts, raising families.
It's a good reminder that history isn't just about kings and battles and grand narratives. It's about the everyday experiences of real people living, loving, struggling, and ultimately shaping the world around them.
Right.
And speaking of those everyday experiences, what else can we piece together about what life was actually like in Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale?
Well, archaeologists and historians are always working to uncover those details.
Right.
So we can analyze things like pollen samples, animal bones, the layout of settlements.
Right.
And from those fragments, a picture begins to emerge.
Okay.
And what we see is a community deeply connected to the land, reliant on their agricultural skills for survival, but also engaged in this vibrant spiritual life.
You know, it's easy to get caught up in the historical drama, the clashes of cultures, the rise and fall of kingdoms. But at its heart, this is really a story about resilience, about adaptation. For generations, these people lived and thrived in this place, facing challenges head on and creating a legacy that still resonates today.
I couldn't have said it better myself. It's a powerful reminder that while the world is constantly changing, there's a certain timelessness to the human experience.
It's a humbling thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
To think that while these monumental historical events were unfolding, life in all its messy, beautiful complexity went on.
It did.
And in many ways, it's those everyday lives, those individual stories that continue to captivate us, that connect us to the past in a way that nothing else can.
Absolutely. And as we delve deeper into our own connections to this place, it's important to remember those who came before us.
Right.
Their stories, even when fragmented or incomplete, have the power to connect us to a past that is both familiar and profoundly different from our own.
And that, I think, is the beauty of taking a deep dive like this. We unearth not just historical facts, but a deeper understanding of ourselves, of our place in the grand scheme of things.
Well said.
As we wrap up this deep dive into Anglo-Saxon Kirkdale, I find myself reflecting on how much we've uncovered. From the remnants of Roman Britain to the rise of the Anglo-Saxons, from the echoes of ancient rituals to the establishment of a vibrant Christian community, it's been an incredible journey.
It has.
And as we conclude, I have one final, slightly provocative thought for you to consider. How did the events that unfold in this seemingly small corner of the world, in Kirkdale and the surrounding area, reverberate through time to shape the England we know today? What echoes of those early Anglo-Saxons, their beliefs, their struggles, their triumphs, can we still see in the present? Food for thought as you continue exploring your own connections to this fascinating period of history. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey through time.